come. Yes, we can.
Person, woman, man, camera, TV.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
There he is. Yeah, I feel it's a Monday in my brain. I was just actually listening to that music. I had a funny story about that. Welcome to the show. I'm Chip Franklin. This is What the Franklin. Off to that austere start. But interesting that that music I got from a place where you can buy different artists create this stuff, and I can buy it from them and not pay royalties on it. So I got an email the other day. Well, no, what's today? Wednesday on Monday. From a guy is in a band called the Rattlesnakes. And this guy wrote that piece. And he said that somebody told him to watch the show, not knowing that he'd written the opening. And so I'm going to try to get him on the show on Friday. They're a great band. They're out of Texas. So anyway, so that's the start. Boy, there's a lot to talk about. Yesterday's marriage equality signing was pretty exciting. Although if you're like me, you're still a little hesitant, knowing that states can mess with that, of course. The Supreme Court, with a 6-3 majority, could easily overturn that and say a state has a 10th Amendment right to do whatever they want to. They've already done that with abortion. Why not gay marriage? Why not interracial marriage? And just go on and on and on and on. We'll get to that in a couple minutes as well. A little bit later on the show, what do you do with juvenile delinquents, kids that commit crimes? Do you put them in jail? Republicans, hell, there was a poll. 2017, I believe I have it here in all my mess somewhere. The Republican Party favored the death penalty for as young as 15 years old. A majority in the Republican Party favored the death penalty. Where's all of that respect for life stuff? Where's that pro-life stuff then, right? Actually, they want to protect your life until the second you're born, and then you're on your own, man. Anyway, so those numbers, again, that's frightening. And speaking of numbers, let's start the show. One more thing I want to tell you a little bit later on in the show. We'll talk about this crypto crash and what it means. Some people are comparing this Bankman guy to Bernie Madoff, which you should not do. I mean, he's a screwed up 30-year-old kid, but he ain't Bernie Madoff. And I have a good friend that lost his entire life savings. And as did Kevin Bacon, who was on my show and told that story once. So anyway, the question is, I think, as you look at this and you ask yourself, what is the future of the GOP right now?
New polling shows that GOP support for Donald Trump in the 2024 presidential election is waning. According to USA Today and Suffolk University, 31% of GOP voters said they would support Trump running again in 2024. 61% said they would rather support a different Republican nominee. CBS News political director Finn Gomez joins us now to put some context around this poll for us,
yeah, Finn,
because, I mean, here we are. Mm-hmm. It's December 2022.
Early.
It's early. So what do you make of these numbers?
Well, I spoke to a bunch of senior Republican strategists, and also have been speaking to advisors to potential 2024 rivals to President Trump, former President Trump. And what these poll numbers show, according to the people I speak to, is that his place in the party has weakened.
Mm-hmm.
He does not have that hold on the party that he once had, at least at this point. But also conversely, you see Florida Governor Ron DeSantis rising.
I don't buy that for a second. Not for a second. I still think this is the guy. This is literally the elephant in the room. Joining me right now from Hill Reporter is senior reporter Todd Nykirk. Todd, there's a lot of stories about Trump and, you know, how quiet he's been. But, you know, whenever I think that the Trump disease is over, I'm always reminded by people like this.
Hunter Biden lied on a federal firearms application, which is punishable by up to 10 years and a $250,000 fine, of which 10% will not be going to the big guy. Rules for thee, but not for my crackhead, Parmesan-smoking, gun criminal son.
You know about throwing stones in glass houses. Todd, what is you know when you're talking to people and sources and other journalists, how do you wrap the where we are right now with the Republican Party? I mean, you know, the midterms was kind of a surprise, although of the 308 candidates running that were election deniers, 204 got elected. So it's not exactly Democrats could get out the party champagne, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was set up well for the Republicans. The places where, you know, you have the Trump strongholds in the South and places in the Midwest, there was nothing you could do about those, you know, House candidates. You know, I think the Democrats did very well on a national level. So when you got into the bigger races, the Senate races, where you're talking about whole states, you know, the Democrats seemingly outperformed, but places where Marjorie Taylor Greene is, you know, she's still winning by 28%.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, all right, so obviously there's pockets of America. I mean, if you're talking about the Electoral College, there was a great article in the Washington Post today about, Jennifer Rubin wrote it, about, you know, electoral politics, because that's what it is right now. On a national level, it's electoral politics. On a local level, a state level, it's gerrymandering. It's controlling the state legislature so you can protect your place in those states. Those two come together in a myriad of ways. Probably the most disturbing way would be that if there were a three-person run, right? And let's say that Trump runs by himself. Say he doesn't get the nomination. DeSantis runs and Biden runs. You know, theoretically that, you know, one of those guys should be able to, well, Biden should be able to get 270 electoral votes under normal circumstances, you know. But again, that there are six states, and we learned last year. And I look at these states, have these states or other possible states that could offer a backdoor for somebody like Trump or maybe even DeSantis. We'll see how crazy he is when he gets on, you know, starts getting in front of national audiences. I mean, people seem to forget, you know, the Republican has not won the popular vote in a national election with one once in 32 years. Well, no, 34 years. The last time they won was 1988. They won, 2004 with Bush, right? And beat Kerry, I believe, in 2004. And then in 1988. That was the last time. So you got one time in 34 years, the Republicans won the popular vote. Yet they still managed to, you know, to again, during the Trump administration, they had both parties and they had that crazy guy in the House. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question, I go back to this is, if Trump is not the de facto, I think he's still the de facto leader. You know, what do we do with this information now? Is if you're not just a Democrat, as an American moving forward? I mean, you had Trump, and I played this yesterday, and it's scary. You know, just when you talk about the idea of violence. I mean, this is what do I have it here somewhere? But you know, we had Marjorie Taylor Greene at the Young Republicans saying that her and Bannon would have showed up armed, right? And then you get Trump saying this.
On a radio show, Mr. Trump warned that there would be, quote, big problems if he's indicted in the classified documents case.
If it happened, I think you'd have problems in this country, the likes of which perhaps we've never seen before.
Nobody could have predicted January 6th. You know, I mean, am I exaggerating here? Am I overreacting? Or is this just a natural dissolution of an idea and I guess a part of the party that will go away?
I mean, those comments are basically the same ones that led up to January 6th.
Right.
You know, if they don't do something about this electoral fraud, you're going to see the country rise up in ways you've never had. Of course, you saw it happen in Washington, D.C. when they assembled, you know, their mob, but it didn't happen in other places in the country. You know, you didn't have riots, you know, anywhere outside of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
I feel like it's somewhat of an empty threat, you know.
I know. But I mean, again, you have when DeSantis gets out on the campaign trail, I think he's going to pale in comparison to Trump.
I think here's what's going to happen, right? So we had 2015, Trump announces, everybody thinks his candidacy is a joke. He comes down on the escalator at Trump Tower. And basically what happened, everybody thought he was a joke. Jeb Bush will take him out, or Lindsey Graham, or, you know, all these different lawmakers. Once they got onto the debate stage, Trump destroyed them. You know, we're going to have to say, if DeSantis is serious about being the candidate in 2024, he's going to have to get up on a debate stage with Trump. DeSantis is a bully. Trump is a bully. Trump is a better bully than DeSantis.
That's the thing, right?
I feel that once they get on a debate stage, Trump is going to take DeSantis out.
I know that the thing about it is that it's all changed. It used to be, you know, to be up there talking policy, you'd catch somebody on maybe their lack of knowledge of, you know, geopolitics or national politics. And you go, there's your aha moment, you know, or or Bush's, you know, read my lips moment. But, you know, Trump will come out and he'll just make shit up.
It'll say Ted Cruz's dad killed Kennedy and his wife's ugly. And Marco Rubio has stupid ears. And Jeb Bush is low energy.
So does USA, these guys aren't prepared for this. I'm sorry, Todd, what'd you say?
Those guys aren't prepared. These people getting on the debate stage with Trump, he'll throw the kitchen sink at you, and they're not prepared for it. This isn't going to be a political debate, especially now that he's much more of a caged animal than he was back in 2016. I mean, he has that much more riding on getting that nomination and trying to get back in the White House.
So this Republican support in this USA Today Suffolk University poll, by 2-1, GOP and GOP-leaning voters said they want Trump's policy but a different standard bearer to carry them. I don't buy that for a second. I think that that will wane. They want to win. I mean, look at what these evangelicals did, how much they just held their breath the last 6 years and went with this guy. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. There is this weird story about Kavanaugh. Did you see this about going out and partying with Matt Gaetz and some others? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was Matt Schlapp's party. You know, I think.
How did that happen? Was it in just someplace in Bethesda, Maryland? Or, I mean, how did he end up going to one of these parties?
Apparently, it's a yearly Christmas party that he attends every year. What made it more interesting?
These other guys just showed up.
What made it more interesting this year was the guest list. I mean, you had Matt Gaetz there. You had Sebastian Gorka. You had Stephen Miller. You know, you had Alex Acosta, who was the judge in the Jeffrey Epstein trial. I mean, you pretty much had the who's who of, the far right attending this party. It should be no surprise to anybody that Kavanaugh would attend something this. I mean,
Kavanaugh's really not that uber conservative. He's not even like Bill Kristol or George Will conservative. Right? When I look at his decisions, the more I read about him during the hearings, you know, he was a creepy guy, but, you know, he kind of had that old, it seemed like, you know, his parents were probably Democrats. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, but I know where, you know, they all live. I know where Georgetown Prep and that area was. I used to live right near there. This is an area in Bethesda, Maryland. He probably did not know that some of these people were going to be there. Is that possible?
Do they care at this point? I mean, I feel like going to these Heritage Foundation events is pretty much par for the course for Alito or Clarence Thomas. I mean, these justices now are operating like there's no consequences for their actions. And you know why? Because there are no consequences for their actions.
Well, there are. I can actually envision one of the things that if the Republicans had 67 votes in the Senate and the House and the White House, I can see in them trying to impeach Sotomayor, Jackson, anybody in there. You know, I mean, they're going to have put forth articles of impeachment in the Judiciary Committee. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who they're going to put on the Judiciary Committee, but I imagine it's going to be somebody like Jim Jordan and Marjorie Taylor Greene, maybe Lauren Boebert. I mean, again, everybody should know Marjorie Taylor Greene hasn't been on a committee in almost 2 years. After some of her comments, they just banned her from committees, right? If I'm not mistaken, she's not serving. She's not doing anything. She just wrote.
They pulled her off once some of the more extreme stuff came out.
That's insane.
Guns and bullying David Hogg and, you know, all this. But, I mean, you look at Clarence Thomas, right? Clarence Thomas and Ginny Thomas's, you know, association with the January 6th insurrection. I mean, you have to think at any other time in history, somebody would have had to step down, you know, over something like that. Or at least there would have been bipartisan condemnation.
That's all changed, though.
There's nothing. I mean, these people, can do whatever they want. You know, that I feel like any sense of ethics on that side of the Supreme Court is long gone out the window.
Yeah, I guess we're talking to Todd Neikirk from Hill Reporter. A little bit later on, we're going to get into a great New York Times article about cursive writing. Do you still write cursive, or do you write block letters?
I have always written block letters. My wife will write a note in cursive once in a while, and I'll have trouble reading it. So.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I think part of it is that I grew up Catholic, and so a big part of part of my life was just, you know, having to deal with nuns hitting me if I didn't get something right. So yeah. That's kind of where we are all right now. All right. So, you know, it's interesting when I put my head behind the idea of Trump and these poll numbers, and I look at Congress and I look at the next speaker, who I'm not sure, it still seems to me it's going to be McCarthy, and what actions they'll take. You know, obviously for many people there, the issues are really important. You know, again, LGBT issues, you know, one of the reasons why I think Republicans voted for that was the inclusion of the interracial marriage part of it. Mm-hmm. But we still, you know, there's still parts of this country that won't allow it to happen. And I think along those lines, it's almost going to be like this with abortion. You're going to have the states that will not allow abortion at all, like Mississippi, and although states like Kansas and others, it's been an interesting turn of events in I guess this last year, and which the midterms played against, right? Everything else seems like with the Supreme Court, and I just wonder how much they will respect the legislative aspect of. I know what Roberts wants to do, you know, but. I mean, that's the weird part of it.
Republicans,
you know?
And Democrats uniting on something interesting. Opposition to TikTok. You've got a group of lawmakers now introducing a bill that would try to ban TikTok in this country because of these concerns longstanding that Chinese government officials could get access to U.S. user data. TikTok has repeatedly said that its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, does not have access to that data. NBC's Sahil Kapoor covers Capitol Hill for us. Sahil, you know, is this going to actually get up for a vote? Could this even happen? What is the mechanism through enforcement here?
It's still to be determined when or whether this will get a vote, Hallie. The bill is in its nascent stage. It is called the Anti-Social CCP Act, introduced by three lawmakers, including the Republican Senator Marco Rubio, the Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher, who, by the way, has been tapped by Republicans to lead the new House Select Committee on China for the next couple of years. And there's a Democratic congressman. You see him on the screen there, Raja Krishnamurthy of Illinois. Now, specifically, the bill would prohibit all transactions from social media companies believed to be under the influence or control of several countries.
Okay, here's the thing about this, Todd, is that there's absolutely no evidence and not even anything to indicate that when I'm on TikTok on my phone, and I'm on TikTok a lot, I post videos there, that I'm compromising personal information and that they're collecting data on me. That's not hard to figure out. I mean, and what they're saying is very similar to what we've heard about COVID from the Republican Party, you know, or the origins of COVID, which is more specifically that, you know, that it came out of some lab. They're just making this shit up, you know. But with TikTok, I mean, obviously, you know, there's another aspect to this, and that's young children, you know, teenage girls especially, that and same with Instagram. When you look at people like Gallagher, and Gallagher is no Uber Democrat anyway, but when you look at Rubio and others, of course, they're playing to the base of people in their state, older, conservative, and they have no idea what TikTok is. They wouldn't even know how to download it. So, I mean, obviously, is this another one of those canary in a coal mines about where we're all going to start moving against social media soon?
I don't think what they're saying is outrageous, right? China is not our friend. If China has access to American social media information, it could be a delicate situation. But before, you know, you pass a bill like this, you know, I mean, Trump tried to ban TikTok and new users a couple of years ago, and it didn't get through the courts because they didn't present a clear enough case, you know, for, you know, what they were saying the Chinese might do with the information or the access that the Chinese have. I don't see this as like a wild fear-mongering situation. Is it possible that the Chinese could be interested in getting the information of, you know, American social media users? Sure, but you have to prove it before, you know, you go ahead and start, you know, banning things within the country.
China has a million ways to gather information and intelligence on companies. And it's as simple as the old way. You just, you know, blackmail people or pay them vast amounts of money. That, to me, is always going to be the answer. Trying to put something in software that, you know, a good programmer can go in, and somebody, one of these forensic programmers can go and reverse technology this and find it. They're smarter than that. I mean, hell, these phones are being made over there. I mean, Apple's going to pull, you probably saw this story, Apple's going to pull some of their manufacturer of iPhones out, which I don't know how much that's going to add to costs, obviously. I mean, what's happening over there is, at least from reports, it's horrible. You hear these stories about where these young people are making Apple phones in these tall buildings, and they have nets around the windows so they can't jump to their deaths. I mean, you think your job sucks, right?
Yeah.
So I don't really understand, you know, when we hear about TikTok. And so what's next? Is Facebook? Or is Twitter? I mean, Musk is doing that on his own, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're concerned about the Chinese social media apps, look at who we have running the American social media apps.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we could talk about Musk forever.
Between Musk and Zuckerberg and, you know.
Yeah, there's another story that I do want to get to with you here. Again, thank you for joining us, Todd Nykirk from Hill Reporter, senior reporter there as well. And I think when we look at these stories and we ask ourselves about, I mentioned the flu earlier and COVID, some of these numbers that are coming, some of these, you know, I guess, statistics we're talking about that are coming out are frightening as hell. I mean, we're beginning to see almost numbers that, you know, challenge 2020.
We turn now to the rise in flu and COVID cases across the country. Officials in New York City and Los Angeles County once again urging people to wear masks indoors. And in California's Alameda County, face coverings are now required in some settings. This as the number of people hospitalized with the flu remains at its highest level in more than a decade. Here's ABC's Rena Roy.
Tonight, COVID mask policies making a comeback. Face coverings now required in high-risk indoor settings like shelters and jails in Alameda County, California, which includes Oakland, and strongly recommended in Los Angeles County and New York City.
So many of our viewers are in the Bay Area right now and that are aware of that. But you don't have to be in the Bay Area to understand that this is obviously something extremely important. That people like Rand Paul and others, you know, Boebert and other voices in the Republican Party have mocked. They're calling now for the possible subpoena of Anthony Fauci. They want to bring him out and they want to call him a liar. They want to try to say that he tried to obstruct an investigation into the Chinese labs or, you know, the masks and all. I'm sure I occasionally get some really interesting hate mail on this. I just can't handle the level of ignorance that Americans have when it comes to vaccines and to controlling a pandemic. We're doing exactly what we should be doing. In policy, but the people aren't acting on it.
And you've seen, I mean, since the COVID pandemic started, you know, I think it feels like maybe to the layperson that this is, you know, a lot of the things about your life that existed pre-COVID, you know, are now kind of back to normal for us. Nothing's ever gotten back to normal for the doctors and nurses that have been, you know, treating these patients for 3 years straight. The winter is a particularly bad time because you not only have people getting COVID, people are indoors, so things are spreading faster. You have pretty nasty flu season going on right now. And then you have like a really serious RSV situation with younger kids as well. So the people who are going to the hospital, you know, for COVID, you know, these hospitals are full again, not only with COVID patients, but with elderly people that, you know, are having trouble fighting off the flu and kids with RSV. So, you know, and they're still making a political football about it instead of just, you know, taking your precautions, wearing masks, being safe and not infecting your neighbor.
Last thing on this is that it bothers me so much more, the attacks on Fauci, than even Let's Go Brandon, right? Mm-hmm. And I just say that because, again, Fauci is, you know, I mean, this is one of the House advisors to the White House. Excuse me, one of the White House advisors. And it's to me, this is exactly what we've lost along the way. And it started with Trump.
That America's physicians, like the real leaders of American medicine, the people you trust for your cancer care and your heart care and your pediatrics care, are out there telling you you need to go get a vaccine. You can decide to trust America's physicians, or you can trust some random dude on Twitter. Like, those are your choices. But I think the key here is to get trusted voices out there spreading truth, spreading science-based information. And for journalists and for people who run platforms, what I would say is you should be thinking about what your personal responsibility is. And do you want to be a source of misinformation and disinformation? That's up to those individuals, but I could really think.
The thing I love about this is because what do Republicans scream ad nauseum? Personal responsibility all the time, right? You know, why are we giving money to them? They should pull themselves up. When the very nature of the pandemic is if you don't get vaccinated, you could kill people. And let's be honest, kill your grandparents.
Yeah.
Kill people who are vulnerable, right? And that's where we are. Anyway, what's going to be a big story tomorrow, Todd?
I gotta think Elon's gonna do something, right? I mean, you had, you have the Twitter files landing like a thought. The Twitter files. I mean, what an impressive bunch of easily accessible, publicly available information that they're dropping here.
The Twitter files is an amazing story too. Obviously, when you look at that and you ask yourself, okay, what exactly are the Twitter files? Hmm. Right? I mean, does anybody really know?
Well, you read this, 40 thread tweet. And you're like, okay, the Biden administration didn't want naked pictures of Hunter Biden, on Twitter. That seems appropriate.
And that's for people who don't know,
that doesn't seem scandalous.
They want it taken down, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was no, you can't say this about Hunter Biden. You can't say that. You just can't show leaked naked photos of him, which is the same for any American who had pictures stolen from them that doesn't want them shown on a public platform.
I'll put a little compilation of Fox and their stuff about Twitter, about Hunter. And this is as far as they go.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. We begin with an unexpected Fox News alert. Just moments ago, Barry Weiss of Substack began posting part two of the Twitter files. Now,
all right, this is a Fox News alert breaking tonight. We are learning more and more about Twitter's efforts to blacklist conservatives.
Breaking news, and we'll be at it. I am Laura Ingraham. This is Ingraham Angle from Washington Tonight. The Twitter files, part two.
Whenever they have these stories, they interview a Republican who talks about how horrible Hunter Biden is. Yeah, you're right. The Biden administration didn't want Hunter's penis on Twitter, okay? And that came from the laptop, right? So we hear more and more about the laptop. It's essentially just a sense of porn is what they're talking about. There were no state secrets on the laptop. You want to go down that area, go to Mar-a-Lago and start looking at documents.
I mean, they've had the laptop for, 2 years now? I think if they were going to find something in there, they would find something.
Trump had it, right? Yeah. I mean, the Trump's justice, Bill Barr, they all have that, right? Mm-hmm. But the other part about this that, again, when you look at this, what people wanted on Twitter and what Twitter did before Musk was take off disinformation. But now my good friend Rex Chapman, as many people see him on there's 20 people on pretending to be Rex Chapman saying horrible things, putting like real Rex Chapman or Rex Chapman number one. And they're coming out and they're saying horrible things and they put Rex's picture up there and Twitter won't do a thing. So this all this stuff with Musk. Musk is a reprehensible human being and a danger, a big danger to all the other platforms. And, I don't know if he's breaking any laws. He's probably not, although letting one person own a platform like that without any accountability and then allowing it to do, we already saw Cambridge Analytica, how susceptible people are to disinformation, not misinformation, disinformation, information that's intentionally made up. And that's, that's a scary place. And I think that's where we are right now. So anyway,
Tesla's down 59% this year. So
Tesla is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
And Musk is not the richest man in the world anymore. So, I don't know what the plan is here, but.
All right, get out of here. Get on that Peloton, man. Get some work done. OK,
sounds good. Thanks, Chip.
Thanks, Doug. And Todd Nykirk, you can find his stuff at hillreporter.com. Great publication. Been following those guys for about 5 years. All right. Coming up in just a couple minutes, and hopefully our guest will be here. We're going to talk a little bit about, and that's one of the things about doing this and not having 100 producers. But I have you guys, and I really appreciate you guys being here. By the way, if you're on the site right now, I would love for you to subscribe and stay with us here. You can go to my website, whatthefranklin.com, and see all the videos that I do. We have videos up there that in the last 4 years have 250 million views. And that's because of this community of people we have that just, you know, that have embraced, I guess, this format of unfiltered news. What's so great is when I was working at KGO, I had a nice guy, but he was not a news guy. And he wanted me to do one thing. And I said, no, this is actually what I've been doing for 25 years. But, you know, KGO is gone right now. It's just us. And appreciate it. But a little bit later on, we'll have Nikki and Mark on with us. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I grew up with a single mom, raised five of us on her own. My dad was a cop, died young. And my mom worked for the U.S. District Attorney's Office. She was tough. But, you know, I was out on my own a lot. And at 12 and 13, I was hanging with 15-year-olds and we were joyriding. I got caught a few times. And fortunately, I had white privilege. I knew cops because of my father. But some of these kids weren't as lucky. Kids I grew up with, a couple of them died, got shot trying to steal things. It's amazing to look at the differences in parties and how they embrace this tragedy. And when I was in Baltimore working, there was a story of a 12-year-old boy who shot a dealer and stole his money and drugs and hid in the bushes and waited for his friends to come help him and then shot them. And of course, we know the story of Malvo and Muhammad. Malvo was a teenager and was sentenced to death. But of course, the Supreme Court had said you can't execute people under 18. And you know, the question is, what do you do? Again, that's happened with the kid that was part of the, I say kid, he was actually over 18, was part of the Boston Marathon bombings. The question is, you know, what do we do with young people who are, you know, either whatever reason are in harm's way? Haley Hunt is the founder of The Verb Kind. It's a nonprofit that organizes volunteers to go inside juvenile detention centers and hang out with these teens and to talk to them and give them some perspective. It's extremely important. I don't know what we do without people like this. Haley joins us right now on What the Franklin. Hey, Haley, how's it going?
This is incredible. What the Franklin? What's going on?
it is the people that looked out for me when I was a kid, right? I had a couple of older brother-in-laws, but mostly I just got lucky and I ran into a system. And I grew up in right outside of Washington, D.C. And I talk about it all the time about my white privilege. And it was true. I mean, I was stopped many times by police, whereas my friends who were either Hispanic, Salvadoran, or Black didn't, you know, they didn't get the same thing. Where are we right now? What is the best way to help these kids once they start to go into the system? Because once they're fully through the system, it's hard.
Yeah. Well, I want to give some context to the conversation right now, which is that my brother was a cop for 17 years. And so he firsthandedly saw a lot of the risk in, you know, in that job. And so, you know, the hating cop thing, you know, I'm right in the middle because I also am passionate about people who are underprivileged, underserved, those kind of communities that need, you know, help, you know. I started this organization accidentally. I was like all of us aspiring to be somebody in my life. I thought I was going to, you know, continue my marriage and I was going to have kids and the white picket fence with a, you know, promising singing career, TV and sports career. And everything came crashing down to a complete halt. And I found myself back in Orlando, Florida, where I grew up, with nothing, no husband, no career, no kids, nothing. And I always had a heart for the underprivileged or underserved communities, but I didn't ever know what I would do with it. And so long story short, there's a lady who I met and she said that she taught yoga to kids in jail. And I remember looking at her and being like, why do you do that? You know? And she's like, well, it actually helps with their behavior. It teaches, you know, calms them down, whatever. And that's what I do. And I was like, well, I'd like to hang out with kids in jail, you know? So I went one night the next week, and I brought nail polish and some cookies and hung out with the girls, 22 girls. And afterward, I asked the major, I was like, hey, can I come back? And he's like, for what? And I was like, I don't know, just to hang out with them. And organically, every single week, every Monday night, I would go and I would hang out with these girls. And then I started hanging out with the boys. I would bring my friends. We would read books. We'd have picnics. We'd play basketball. We'd do the thing that the 15-year-old wants to do, but he's in jail, but he never really actually gets to do a lot of times because he's either trying to provide for his 12-year-old sister, he's gotten in a gang and he can't get out. His dad is in jail and his mom is gone mentally. You know, we don't, there's so many situations that you can't just put them all into one group and just assume that you know what they've gone through. You know what I mean? At the bottom, at the end of the day, all of these are children. And so every week, these kids would tell each other like, hey, don't mess up, like act right because Miss Haley's coming. And they would say, who's Miss Haley? And they'd say, this lady that brings us snacks and she hangs out with us or whatever. Well,
how old are these kids, Haley? How old are they?
We've seen them from 11 to 18. I mean, 11, sometimes 19, but 11 to 18. And
they've seen a lot of life. I mean, and sadness and sorrow and danger and to have somebody that really shows their first instinct when people like yourself come in is like, what way, what do they want me to do? I mean, it's almost like they don't even trust the fact that there's people that care about them because they've very rarely seen it.
Yep, that's right. So they, not only did it affect the behavior of the children, but it brought peace to the staff, and the staff would be like more at peace that day. They'd be like, we know everything's going to be good. And the major would be like, why? And they're like, cause Haley's coming. And we know that when Miss Haley comes. So long story short, the state of Florida heard what I was doing. They said, what you're doing is modifying the behavior of these kids so much. We need you to duplicate yourself in every county of Florida. And so now we have an organization that literally mentors kids in the detention centers. We go in, we hang out with kids, but the coolest part is we meet kids that need hope. So yeah, we're not just painting nails and like playing basketball. We are literally meeting these kids who have lost everything. They're in the foster system. It's the most heartbreaking stories you've ever heard in your life. A lot of these kids are orphans. They don't have parents. So they just need hope that there is something for them in the future. You know what I mean? That they aren't their past, that there is, yeah, there's some kids that need their butts kicked. You know what I mean? Like we all need their butts kicked, but it's called the Verb Kind. And we are called the Verb Kind because I was tired of people protesting and doing all this garbage, you know, talking about, you know, change and helping people and everything. And I'm like, let's just be an action kind of people. Let's be the kind of people that are action, that actually do what they say. So we are called the Verb Kind.
It's interesting. I mean, obviously there have been protests about, and you know, growing up in the police world, I did as well. It was different then. I think today, and for a lot of different reasons, being a cop is not easy. But, you know, police, you know, what you're doing for these kids actually is what people are about trying to do with cops as well, to get them to be more empathetic. And I think part of that is, you know, I mean, my dad was a lot older than me. My dad was like 45 when I was born. But he walked a beat and in Washington, D.C. with just a stick, not a gun. Right. Wow. Everybody knew each other. He pulled his gun. I used to joke. He pulled his gun once in 20 years. And let me tell you, I never did that again. And that was a joke. But the point is that that community, that relationship, I think what you're doing is something that a lot of people could do. They could become involved. But I think on a bigger picture, what you're doing actually would be interesting for police to see, you know, because, I mean, these are the people, you know, with recidivism, there's a real good chance that the kids you're with when they leave could get in trouble again. Right. Yeah. And it would be great if they understood a little bit about what law enforcement was like as well. Right. I mean, you know, there's Derek Chauvin is an outlier. Most cops don't put their knee on a young man's neck until he's right. Dead. However, you know, with these young people you're talking about, we're looking square into the future. Right. I mean, we're not talking about just a few thousand people here. We're talking hundreds of thousands of kids in a nation with 350 million people that are in harm's way. So where does this stand right now? When you go in and you see these kids, Is there a graduation of sorts? Do you get to see the fruition of you and your fellow cohorts, your efforts?
Well, so I will tell you, if you're watching or watch this later, that's our next, you know, obviously we know that we're not going to go in and these kids are going to end up going to college over this, you know, like a, you know, an hour conversation once a week isn't going to make the kid, you know, become the next so-and-so. We don't know. We're just, you know, planting a seed. But yes, we have seen some of these kids, a perfect example of a guy who is one of our mentors, tall, looks like he plays in the NBA. You would assume that's what he does, played in college. Now he manages people's money for Morgan Stanley or one of the big banks, one of the big financial firms. We walk in and I said, hey guys, how many of y'all love Marcus? Raise your hand. I said, how many of you guys know what Marcus does for a living? Of course, they're like, he plays basketball. I'm like, actually, no, he manages people's money. Y'all like money? And they're like, yeah. I mean, of course, everybody loves money, you know? So I'm like, how many of you guys would love to learn how to manage people's money and the stock market? So Marcus offered whoever wanted to learn about the stock market to contact him. Well, you know what? A lot of these kids aren't going to contact him. But the kids that do pursue that, they get the help. So Marcus connects with one of the boys. He learns the stock market. Marcus gets to help him buy his first stock for $10. The kid now, a year later, is getting his insurance license. He knows how to work the stock market. The bottom line is that this kid thought that the only way he could ever make money is being in the gangs and selling dope or whatever he was doing or stealing. Marcus looked like him, was you know, very similar personality, and Marcus was doing something way cooler than freaking selling dope. You know what I mean? And so These kids see that. And also I agree that I would love to partner with sheriff's departments and police departments. They do that sometimes in other Savannah, Georgia. There's the cops there are very involved in the detention centers there. They actually mentor kids. And I think that's a huge deal. It's a bridging the gap situation because everybody hates everybody. You know what I mean? Yeah. And to be honest, these kids don't care what you look like. They don't care where you're from. They don't care if you're old or young, black or white. They just want someone to listen to them. So if you're watching and thinking, man, I'd love to go, but I'm old and white, or I'm old and black, or young and Spanish. Like, it doesn't matter. Oh, I just am a janitor, or oh, I'm just a banker. They want love. That's what it is. And love doesn't really look like anything but action.
I got to go and teach. Teach comedy writing at a federal prison.
Wow.
So I was a stand-up comic. So I went in, there's a prison outside of DC called Lorton. It's in Lorton, Virginia. And it was a federally owned prison. And we'd go in there, and there was like three rows of glass between us and the comedians. And we begged them to let us stand up on inside to talk to them, because you can't do comedy like that. And so it was like, I was the only white guy. There were five of us and four black guys. But I mean, I love black crowds. Because
they're the hardest to perform in front of, for sure.
No, they're actually the best. The truth
they're
is
best, for sure.
They're the best. Yes. They're the black audiences, the television shows and things I've done. They were great anyway. But so I said afterwards, I go, you know, these guys really dug this. I go, I would love to come back and, you know, help people write, you know, if you want to do something like that. And a friend of mine named Mike Larson, who was another comedian who did this out in San Quentin. He told me about, you know, he said, when I came out to California, he said, there's a lot of places you can do this. And prisoners are, these are men, right? These aren't kids, but mm-hmm. they were kids. And you can see the kids in their eyes sometimes, but through all the hard exterior, they just, all they needed was a break. And I say a break, not like letting them out of prison, a break of like just caring about what they have to say and what they want to do. And we all, politically, with the politics of this on both sides, talk about the future. You know, the future is right in front of us. It's right down the hall. It's across the street in the Baskin Robbins, these young people. And it's, you know, I think your story coming from tragedy to giving back is, you can tell from here, just the people that are watching this, it really means something to them.
Yeah. You know, I love your show because there's so many different kinds of people on here. And I think that I'm just tired of everybody being against everybody. Like, we're so fed to hate everybody. You know what I mean? Like, and then you walk into a coffee shop and you think that the person that doesn't look like you or isn't like you is hating you. But really, it's not like that. Like, you know what? We're more unified than we think we are. And I believe that something like the verb kind is actually impacting that. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So if you live in Florida, and then if you guys live in Alabama, we're in 10 counties, 9 in Florida, 1 in Alabama. Our dream is to expand. We need some, we're not even funded. I do this trying to become, you know, funded so we can actually do this everywhere. But if you guys want to check it out, theverbkind.com, our Instagram, our Twitter is, get this, come to jail with me. Literally written out, come to jail with me. And one of the coolest things that's happening right now, trending on Twitter and everything else, is Jalen Phillips from the Miami Dolphins is up for NFL Man of the Year. And one of the reasons why,
great kid, by the way, great kid,
incredible. One of the reasons is because he comes to jail with us and in mentors the kids. He's brought his teammates and everything. So if you see Jalen Phillips and you get to vote for NFL Man of the Year, vote for Jalen, because he's helping the verb kind. And nobody's doing this. You know what? Can I say one more thing that's really,
of course,
politically incorrect? But it's very easy to raise money and get support and get people to help you when you are raising money for cleaning the ocean, pets who need homes, or kids that are sick. But let me tell you something. These kids, a lot of them are, maybe they don't have cancer or whatever, but these kids are sick in their own way from trauma, from heartache, from a lot of times, I mean, some of your comments on here, like ADHD, PTSD, you know, broken homes, it's sickness in our hearts. You know what I mean? That causes us to do different things. So I know I keep going on and on, but I don't even know. Like, this, and by the way, someone just said, why don't all states have programs like this? One, willing people, and two, money. Like, the state doesn't pay me to do this. They just have literally given me the keys to the jail system. When BLM and all that stuff happened, I just went to my Black friends and I was like, I'm not getting into all that, but I do want to know how I can serve you guys. And she's like, just keep doing what you're doing, whatever. I went to Tallahassee. That's when they asked me to duplicate this. And they literally gave me access to the jail. So God has given me a huge favor. They're letting me do it. So let's do this all over the nation. And if y'all want to help me, please help me. We need all the help we can get. Seriously.
Haley, you should be on, this should be on the Today Show right now. I mean, I'm totally serious. This is, wow. this needs to be amplified. I'm going to tell Jeff just what a tremendous job you did. Thank you for being here. And we'll keep in touch with you. Okay.
Wow. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk soon.
All right. Be safe. Thank you again, Haley. Thanks, Hunt. Man. It's theverbkind.com. Let me make sure I got that right. It is. Yes. The Verb Kind. It's a nonprofit that should have more. You can just Google that, V-E-R-B kind, and you'll get the information you need. All right. So, wow, that was great. Coming up in just a few minutes, so we'll talk to Nikki and Mark and see what's happening with their show. I want to remind you to go to YouTube or go to whatthefranklin.com and subscribe to the show. It's free. You'll find out. You hit the little bell and let you know when we're doing a special show as well. We've got some great guests coming up in the near future. We got Wanda Sykes. We have John Cusack, Dan Rather, a lot of great people that can be part of this with you. You know, one of the things, though, I think about when I think of young people, you remember that EpiPen guy, the dude that did time because he rose the prices of EpiPens like 300%. There's a real question here when you're trying to figure out exactly what it means to be in that tech world and to be successful. And these young people, and this kid is 30, this kid is Sam Bankman-Fried, is the founder and former CEO of this FTX. It's a bankrupt cryptocurrency company. I mean, now he's facing an 8-count federal indictment. Joining us to talk about that is attorney Chanel Rowe. She's nice enough to change her day around and to come with us and talk. Chanel is has served in the counsel in the enforcement division of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's Miami Regional's office, where she led these investigations and negotiated many of the settlements and is giving us a square look at what happened here. Thank you so much, Chanel. I know you had a crazy day, and I appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
So first of all, most people don't really understand cryptocurrency. So stop me if I'm wrong. In essence, in a lot of ways, it's a confidence thing. And I don't mean that in a con game way. I mean, you can actually make a strong case that a dollar bill, I thought I had one here, is all about confidence, right? It's a piece of paper, but we all have confidence that it has some value. Cryptocurrency was working under that same umbrella. that this was going to be a new way of exchanging currency or goods or services with people using the different forms of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology, which basically creates a ledger that's everywhere that everybody can see. What happened with this guy?
Chip, you're absolutely right. That's a great definition, a very, very great basic definition. So what happened here, to your point, right, and the idea behind crypto was to be decentralized, was to have control. And yes, it is built on confidence that the market puts behind the instrument, right? By investing in it, the market told us that this was a valuable instrument in the marketplace and people wanted to invest in it to develop its own asset class, right? As a digital asset, right? And we're trying to figure out where it fits, what laws applies. And that's kind of the hot water that we're seeing come out of this. Now, what's interesting about Sam Bankman-Fried is one, FTX is actually an exchange, right? And his separate company, Alameda, is a crypto hedge fund. So the interesting part about these exchanges is that it effectively acts as a middleman, right? It allows you to make transactions over the exchange, but it also allows you to do what's called stake or leave your coins with the exchange. And similar to your money that you put into a bank, that money is then lended, right? And you are getting a yield on those loans. Now, unfortunately, when you put a middleman in there, it almost defeats the purpose of it being controlled.
Right. Right. That was the whole idea of crypto. There's no middleman, right? Exactly. No banks, no governments, just, you know, currency that would be exchanged.
Right. And earlier this year, we had Voyager and Celsius and a number of other exchanges file bankruptcy, right? Which highlighted for many more savvy crypto investors that staking your tokens with an exchange is not a good idea, that you should have your custody, whether on a what we call a cold wallet that's off the internet, or you make your transactions on the exchange and then you get off. But when you leave your money there, the confidence is whoever's running that exchange. And unfortunately, Sam Bankman-Fried couldn't hold customers' confidence and began lending that money also to this hedge fund, his Alameda research.
Wait, can I just jump in there? First of all, cryptocurrency is kind of risky. Hedge funds are inherently risky. Isn't that like risky exponentially squared, right? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So I've seen people being interviewed and somebody compared this. It might have been you. We were talking about with Bernie Madoff. Famous people. I interviewed Kevin Bacon once, and I had no idea that Kevin had lost a lot of money, a huge chunk of his fortune to Bernie. One of my best friend's parents lost millions to Bernie Madoff. And Bernie Madoff's scheme was a typical pyramid deal, right? So the people would put money in, he'd give the people that were asking their money from the money put in and keep the rest. And that's the deal. And as long as nobody, and then when the recession hit in 08 and 09, people wanted their cash and there was no cash to give them. the cryptocurrency and what this kid did, I mean, there are bitcoins, right? There's actually something you can hold that has value on that market, right? But most people, it's just numbers on a ledger. So if I wanted to invest, like some people, I've heard people say now is the time to get into some cryptocurrency investments because it's all crashed, but it's not going to go away because there's still billions of dollars and huge corporations in it. Would that be bad information?
I mean, not necessarily if you can tolerate the risk, right? I mean, right. With anything, you want to buy low and sell high, right? And so that's why that advice is going out because it is crashing. But the underlying truth is that many people don't believe that this is an asset class that's here to stay, unfortunately. And the reason why I would say this is a Madoff-like, right, is because it's going to be one of the biggest financial frauds in our history, just like Madoff was at the time. Now,
really, will it challenge those numbers, Madoff's numbers?
It's yet to be seen. I mean, I've seen some numbers around $8 billion in losses. It's yet to be seen. And by no means is this investigation over, whether it's from the U.S. Attorney's Office or the SEC or the CFTC. They're all involved. This is all ongoing and moving very quickly as they're uncovering more and more information about, you know, this sort of misappropriation of funds, using investor funds to fund this other hedge fund, trying to pay the debts of this other hedge fund with investor funds, using it for personal gain, using it for, you know, to make illicit campaign contributions. All of it is fraud, right? Quite frankly. And
how is it the compliance offices of so many of these financial guidance firms force them to literally dot every I and cross every T And, you know, and FINRA and the FCC will, SEC will come down hard on those that don't. How does cryptocurrency just slide through all that and have this wild, wild west?
Well, I think what we're seeing is the convening of forces that's not going to be the case for much longer, right? And so the problem is, as in a crypto exchange, many of them are not registered with the SEC, right? And this is also sort of an altar call, if you will, that you better register and you better comply with these rules that are in laws that are already on the books, or they're going to come after you. And I sense that this is just sort of the beginning of a wave of enforcement actions to send a very clear signal, because they should be registered. And if they were registered, they would have disclosure requirements, conflicts of interest requirements. There would be a number of controls that would give information to the public and the investing public in a way that they can make the right decision, and potentially protections, right? Because none of this is FDIC insured or SIPC insured.
No.
Mm. Once you're lost, you're lost, right?
Kind of like the FDICs in Texas in the 80s, kind of, right? I mean,
well, there we go, right?
Yeah. last question here. So, do you think that this 30-year-old, I keep calling him a kid, I have kids that are older than him. Do you think that that what he did was malicious? Or did he panic when things went down and he tried to rob Paul to pay Peter, like a lot of people do? When, you know, I mean. What could he have just declared some sort of bankruptcy when things went bad instead of trying to save it by breaking the law? And how much time is this kid facing if he's convicted on these?
Yeah, you know, I can't speculate on what was going on in his mind's eye, right? But for someone to become a, you know, a billionaire in 5 years, starting at 25, who's now 30, you know, to at one point be making $1 million a day on his trading system.
Ow.
You know, it's just an exponential amount of money to come into, right? And this operation that it takes to keep it going, who knows? I don't know if it was intentional, if it was not, but at some point there were decisions made to move money, knowing that there was not enough money. And to your point, FTX filed bankruptcy back in November, right? And that, to my mind's eye, is sort of when the prosecutors, the SEC, started paying closer attention to what was happening there. And that investigation probably ramped up if it had not already been a hot. But it's yet to be seen what his intent was. I'd seen some interviews with him where he said the reason he wanted to make as much money was to give most of it away altruistically. You know,
I mean, he did these interviews against counsel advice. I mean, he was out talking, you know, to some people. I saw on the Squawk, he was talking to that guy, and he was like just saying a lot. And it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, he even made some statements about, you know, doing some wrongdoing. So it's yet to be seen how culpable he is, right? But at some point, he knew that the ship was on fire, and there were decisions and loans that were made that should not have been made, right? And he's got to be responsible for that. And a lot of people lost a lot of money.
You're so awesome to join me and help explain this to people. I really appreciate it, Chanel.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you, Chip. Anytime.
All right, take care. Again, attorney Chanel Rowe. Bye-bye now. She did me a real solid on that. She was driving all over someplace in Texas, trying to get to there. And she came in at the last minute and helped us out. I have a little bit of history with crypto, but we can talk about that some other time. I do have a history with this next person. That would be the one and only Nikki Maduro, who I forgot to send you your link. And you obviously were just looking for it and joined me here. Her show kicks off at 12. Mark's show kicks off in just a few minutes. And I don't think he's going to be able to make it because he's always at the last minute. Well, did you watch his show yesterday when all that stuff crashed?
No. I'm sorry. I didn't. I was at the hospital with my daughter, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to come on yesterday. She had her second infusion. But Kim McAllister is filling in for Mark all the rest of this week.
Oh,
so,
okay, great.
Yeah, so she's going to start in a couple of minutes. So, and I'll be joining her for the back half of her show, probably the last 15 minutes. So good luck to Kim McAllister, who's a consummate professional. But yeah, no, I didn't. I wasn't able to watch Mark's show yesterday. So everything crashed again. That sucks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we had a great show. You have to get this woman, Haley Hunt, on your show. She essentially goes, her story is amazing, but she goes into prisons and works with young kids and tries to help them, in a really unique way. And having been kind of a juvenile delinquent myself, there weren't a lot of those going around. I was on the other side of the scared straight stuff, you know. Yeah. Ever tell you that story? My dad, he caught when I was about 9, me and my friend were shooting BB guns at crows, right? And we were like underneath the Woodrow Wilson Bridge on the Potomac River in D.C. My dad caught us and he took there were three of us. Only two of us were shooting, but they took us down to the morgue, pulled a dead old black man out and who had a shotgun wound. And we could see the shotgun wound was this big.
Oh,
he made my friend put his hand in there. My old man was crazy. He was crazy.
But it left an impression.
You're
not going to forget that anytime soon.
So. Yeah, Todd talks about it all the time. Anyway, so what do you got going on today?
Emily Hoven with Cal Matters is going to join us today. California is making an appearance at COP15. You know, the United Nations look at climate change and environmental issues. So she's been talking with people out there. So we'll get an update on that. Sad news. I don't know if you ever watched the Ellen DeGeneres show, but Twitch, who was the DJ, has passed away. And now TMZ is reporting.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah,
and he passed away. TMZ is reporting, sadly, that it's by suicide. And I want to have a conversation about he was 40 years old and he's had what many would, you know, be very jealous of, a very great career and was on his way up and had done so much. And just kind of this change in a life's trajectory, career wise, the Ellen show ends, you know, nobody knows what's in somebody's mind, but what we can do to support people with mental health. And of course, making it easier for people to get help with the new suicide prevention line 988. So we'll be talking about that. We have a bunch of Hollywood news and lighter stuff as well. So it's
speaking of suicide, did you see the cost of the net on the Bay Bridge, on the Golden Gate Bridge?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's $400 million now.
It's crazy. It's crazy expensive. I don't know if San Francisco could hire anything
people,
that's not.
You could literally hire people to stand along the bridge and talk to people. And
well, they
so
do.
They
have people that do that sometimes.
No, but I mean, right. I mean, to me.
All day, every day, yeah.
I never figured the net is, when you jump to the net, when you hit the net, couldn't you just crawl to the edge and then just finish the jump?
Yeah, but most people say, right, the minute they jump,
yeah, right.
That's they really right. regret it. So, but it's really sad, and yeah, there's help out there for people. Just 988 if you're feeling, you know, despondent. But
good job, Miss Medora. We'll see you at noon. Okay.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye bye now. The one and only Nikki Medora. All right. Before we go out of here, let me say goodbye with one of my videos. You can see these videos. You can go to again whatthefranklin.com or my YouTube channel. Just put in Chip Franklin, and please subscribe. Be part of the whole deal, and that way you know what's going on. Again, great show. Thank you so much for being here. You guys, the only reason we're doing it, right?
The Jews had better start being nice to people like us.
I'm here to tell you what's fucked up with the GOP in 60 seconds. There's four people you need to know. Lindsey Graham, this shit princess.
Bitch!
Tucker Carlson and Larry.
Herschel Walker is a nightmare.
Lindsey's a little boy.
Please.
A Greek tragedy in a bad suit.
I'm gonna try to help our president, Donald Trump.
Joe Biden, you're a piece of shit.
That's Margie, a knuckle-dragging butt swamp, chortling evil every time she grunts into a mic.
So no evidence that this was a, quote, armed insurrection.
Then there's Tucker.
Disgusting.
A media whore who put anything into his mouth for a buck. And Larry.
Mouth,
he's a Republican voter, a racist.
The Jews.
Drowning in a puddle of his own inadequacy.
I will eat your ass.
So the GOP empowered Larry to attack the world with his small Trumpian penis.
Very excited about that.
The irony here is that Tiny Fingers, orange-faced windbag, achieved it all through this guy.
Well, it could be a civil war.
But it won't be Biden or Hillary or any Democrat that brings them down. The GOP will die, as they should, at the hands of Larry.
Goddamn right.
Who's with me?
Woo! Winning.
Yeah. I can handle things. I'm fine.
We shall overcome. Yes, we can.
Person, woman, man, camera, TV.
What the fuck is wrong with you?